This is July 1st, 2012, and because it is now we're into July, I thought I would offer kind of a summary kind of Taisho. We hadn't scheduled a Taisho for today, but a few days ago I realized it had been 6 weeks since I gave Taisho, and I thought I'd just throw one in before the one next week. And what I'm going to do is read... before I do, just on behalf of the whole Sangha, thank you to everyone who turned out for the Ralph Chapin Memorial Work Week that we just finished yesterday. It's a lot of work that was accomplished, a tremendous amount of work. Probably, from what I can tell, we get most of the season's work, the spring and summer season, the work done just in this 1 week we have every year. It involves a lot of exertion by a lot of people. It's not something that's easily done, and everyone who participated, thank you on behalf of the Sangha. I'll be reading this morning from a book called A Zen Harvest. The subtitle is Japanese Folk Zen Sayings. And what this is a rich, rich collection of... let's see here. I'll be reading from the introduction. By the man who compiled and translated these sayings, Soiku Shigematsu. And in the introduction, he says that this is a collection of Japanese tanka, also known as waka, haiku, and other short traditional Japanese literary forms suitable for practicing the capping phrase exercise. What are capping phrases? These are, well, just that. They're haiku and waka and other Zen verses that in Japan, in the Rinzai tradition, are used in koan practice. When the student provides a satisfactory response to the koan, he must select a capping phrase, usually a passage from a poem among the thousands in a special anthology, the only book allowed in the monastery. So we don't do that here. I don't know of any Zen center in the United States that does that, although maybe those very, very few Rinzai centers might do it. But a little bit more about this, still from the introduction. Some of the entries in this collection are the waka of famous Japanese Zen masters such as Dogen, Ikkyu, Bunan, Hakuin, and Ryokan. Others are by lay students, such as Miyamoto Musashi, the famous swordsman and author of The Book of Five Rings. So what I'm going to do is just cherry-pick some of these many hundreds of capping phrases or Japanese folk Zen sayings, and some of them comment on them, others not. I'm going to start with something related to our work at Chapin Mill or anyone's work, physical labor. neglect or effort in summer is shown on the heads of rice in autumn fields. Any gardener knows what that's all about. Here's another one. Sweat runs on my face upside down. Rice planting. Or we could say weeding. Here's one, a few suitable for this weather. Hot and humid night, groping for the fan, half asleep. A long drought, not even a drop of water to quarrel over. A firefly burns itself with love silently. Its unspoken feeling may be far deeper than words. Voiceless trees and grasses deep in the mountains invite us with their flowers and blossoms. Everyone admires beautiful flowers in bloom, but the ones who know visit them after they've fallen. Can think of that in terms of the beauty of youth. In hell, too, is there the shade of a tree, a summer afternoon. Tonight or tomorrow night, it's going to be, the moon will be full. So I came across a few here about the moon. To sleep on the pillow with the moon in perfect peace, what a joy. Of course, the moon in Zen is a symbol of the enlightened mind. To Chapin Mill. The moon on the pond, why is it dirty tonight? It's the water that's muddy, not the bright moon. Some of these can be taken metaphorically, others not, don't need to be. There's a foreword, preface here offered by Robert Aitken Roshi, which he says, of these entries, some are wise and some are otherwise. There seems, but there's never. moon in the water. The moon shattered on the shore, restored to wholeness in the white water receding from the rocks. This can also maybe bring us back to the Chape Mill work retreat. Everyone can dare to bear what's easy to bear. Truly to bear is to bear what's hard to bear. I can also, of course, refer to all of the difficulties we encounter in practice and the disappointment of never having things work out quite as we want them to. Patience enhances your samadhi power. Patience with others is for yourself. Yeah, there is this idea in Japan that when we are exercising patience or forbearance with others, it increases our jōriki, our samadhi power. It's a good thing to remember the next time you're in a long line at the bank or Wegmans or stuck in traffic, or someone who annoys the hell out of you and you have to put up with them day in and day out at work. Just take some consolation from the fact that your samadhi power is growing. Patience with others is for yourself. Trees have branches, bamboos, knots. You and I have these bills on file. And bridging the distinction between so-called mundane and spiritual, If you grasp the heart of this sutra, you'll know the voices of merchants and customers teach the Dharma. Turn your mind into rocks and trees, then even the busy streets will be nothing but paradise, a busy street paradise. That's the challenge of practicing in a noisy city. To turn our mind into rocks and trees. And with regard to this, what we call mind. Mind is the one that reminds you of your illusory mind. Always mind your mind. Just mind. Mind. I surely hear its voice, but can't see it. In the garden, just the rustling of pine trees. There's also a lot of a lot of stuff in here about human relations. Feeling happy with my children, finally realizing my thoughtlessness toward my parents. Mourners gathered together, each bearing his, her, its own sadness, recumbent image of Buddha. The man I saw yesterday, what's become of him? Today, under the tomb. Tomorrow, someone will ask about me. What's become of him? Not yesterday's, not tomorrow's, but today's cherry flowers. Today's lilies, today's roses. There are no tomorrow's roses, there are no yesterday's lilies. Just this. Here's one that's just distinctive in its this pure humanity of it. Death so far has been none of my business. Must I also die? Oh, help! Help! White face, yellow face, ugly or beautiful, it's hard to change. But our mind can be changed, so set it right. Here's another one that can be understood metaphorically. Jump into the sky over those clouds, and you'll see the moon even on a rainy day. And to those who may sometimes wonder why we need to sit every day. Unseen, unnoticed, but dust will gather naturally in the sleeves. Out the train window, scarecrows whiz by, and people too. When I read this, I was reminded of quite a strong feeling that sweeps over me when I'm going up or down these very, very long escalators in the subway system of Stockholm. They're two or three stories long, these escalators, and they're right next to, this, the one going down is right next to the one going up, and the feeling of flux, of the transitoriness of life. All these faces, this is especially during rush hour when every step of the escalator has one or two people on it, hundreds and hundreds of faces coming towards you as you're going down, they're going up. You see them for a few seconds, or a second maybe, and then gone. Out the train window, scarecrows whiz by, and people too. Without wine, how can they become mine, those cherry blossoms? This reminds me of quite a poignant passage by William James in his classic book, The Varieties of Religious Experience. And he talks about the appeal of alcohol. I'll read it in its entirety. The sway of alcohol over mankind is unquestionably due to its power to stimulate the mystical faculties of human nature, usually crushed to earth by the cold facts and dry criticisms of the sober hour. Sobriety diminishes, discriminates, and says no. Drunkenness expands, unites, and says yes. It is, in fact, the greater exciter of the yes function in man. It brings its votary from the chill periphery of things to the radiant core. It makes him for the moment one with truth. Not through mere perversity do men run after it. To the poor and the unlettered it stands in the place of symphony concerts and of literature, and it is part of the deeper mystery and tragedy of life that whiffs and gleams of something that we immediately recognize as excellent should be vouchsafed to so many of us only in the fleeting earlier phases of what in its totality is so degrading a poisoning. The drunken consciousness is one bit of the mystic consciousness, and our total opinion of it must find its place in our opinion of that larger whole. I think for those who are just find themselves terribly judgmental of people who are addicted to alcohol and drugs, this kind of thing can take some of that judgmentalism out of it. It doesn't mean that we excuse drunkenness or any kind of addiction. we know how corrosive it is, how crippling it is, but it can help us leaven that judgmentalism with some understanding of what is behind it. We can say that the impulse to abuse alcohol and drugs comes from ultimately from the same root as the spiritual one. But what makes it so poignant, this addiction to substances, is that it's such a false promise. It's so instead of drawing us closer to the promise of merging with what we imagine to be other, it is something entirely the opposite. Without wine, how can they become mine, those cherry blossoms? Well, we all know how they can become ours without wine. Each time wishing beforehand to talk it out, I've never parted from you without feeling many words unspoken. Here's one that thought-provoking. The quarrel is just an echo. Your rival is aggressive because you are. Thunder has shot the dog's quarrel, shattering them both in a blink. Fish live in streams, birds nest in trees, human beings dwell in warm hearts. To be fully human, that is, we have to embody our own hearts. A newborn baby, by and by, grows cunning and shrewd, farther, farther from Buddha. What a pity. There's one that speaks to the our need to not attach. Floating clouds sticking nowhere may fly over any mountaintop. You're gone, but I'm still attached to you. Grasses burn, but their roots remain. How joyous to meet with you, how terrible to part. Greeting is the beginning of farewell. Here's encouragement to people who feel that they're not making the kind of progress they want. Walk on deliberately and you'll surely see the world beyond the 1,000 miles, even if you walk as slow as a cow. Here's another metaphorical one. A heavy snowfall disappears into the sea. What silence! Another one thought-provoking. Remembering him, you say, then you're not really in love. No remembering, no forgetting. The secret of true love. How regrettable never to return. Days and months, flowing water, and human lives. Now, this now is a time for goodbye. Disappearing like the dew, my life, your life. These verses of speaking of impermanence and passing can be so nourishing of the spiritual impulse, the spiritual life, if we can really, really assimilate and really grasp the predicament that we're in as human beings, that the people here now will all be gone in 100 years, 80 years, gone. We'll all be gone. None of us left. if the room is left, none of us will be in it. One who really takes this to heart, one who deeply feels the passing nature of things, will be someone who is resolved to do something about coming to terms with it. I touched on these wonderful words of Zen Master Dogen. If you would practice the Dharma, you must deeply, deeply feel the passing nature of things and have faith in karma. Speaking of karma, used to hang around women on the streets, now churning within him the flaming wheel of karma. Pieces of wood, broken and burning, show different forms, but their smoke is the same color. Here's one that reminds me of a story that Roshi Kapo used to tell sitting in the summer in the Zendo in Japan. They would sometimes, during Sesshin, they would sometimes remove the screens from the Zendo, and the mosquitoes would come in and force you to get deeper into your practice, because of course there was no moving allowed. And when you feel a mosquito or 5 or 10 of them on you and you can't move, what do? You do moo. You get as completely, thoroughly absorbed in your practice, whatever it is. And that's how you get beyond it. So anyway, this one reads, "No drop of blood for you, mosquito, from my mosquito-like body." The story of Harada Roshi's first Kensho was that he had a fearsome determination to break through his koan, and he went into the bamboo grove, the swampy bamboo grove, where the mosquitoes were particularly thick, and he wore only a loincloth. This is summer, and he was mostly naked, and he sat himself in zazen, and the mosquitoes descended on him. And in order to bear up under the itching, he had to go deep into his practice, and that's how he supposedly had his first Kensho. It's something we don't need mosquitoes to apply the same principle when we're sitting here in the heat on a humid night and are intensely uncomfortable because of the humidity, the mugginess. There too, how do you get beyond it? By becoming one with it. And how do you become one with the heat? By becoming one with your practice. It's a tremendous triumph when we realize that we have the power in our own mind. We have the power to transcend conditions. We don't have to suffer when we have this ability to concentrate and lose ourselves completely in our practice. Same with pain, physical pain in your knees or your back or anywhere else. But as long as we have the option of fleeing the adversity, whether it's pain or heat or mosquitoes or anything else, As long as we have the chance to escape, then we won't learn this tremendous gift of oneness that can deliver us from all such adversity. Well, I think I've done enough of these, and so let's stop now and recite the four vows.